Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world, because there are lots of toxic chemicals out there, and I hear about more every day. But there's also more and more toxic free alternatives, consumer products that we can use, other things that we can do and make ourselves. And the more we know about the subject, the more we can be empowered to do something about it. It's Tuesday, the 7th of January, 2014, and it is cold today. It's even cold here in Clearwater, Florida, where I do my show, where I live, and it's really cold. I mean, it's when I tell you it's 50 degrees, I'm sure many of you are going, oh, I wish it was 50 degrees. But for here, for Florida, where we walk around in our tank tops and shorts, most of the year, 50 degrees is cold. And my producer, Todd, is Skyping to me saying it's minus two here in Philadelphia where he is. So it's really cold there. So today we're going to be talking about how to heat your house in a way that saves you money and is less toxic than the normal heating. My guest today is Paul Wheaton, who I had on before. We were talking about compact fluorescent lights may save energy, but they can harm your health. And now he's back to help us learn how to heat our houses. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Deborah. It's 21 degrees here in Montana.
Okay, good. So we've established that it's colder every place on Earth than here. And well, I'm freezing.
And it's actually warmer now. We were kind of thinking, boy, it's nice. It's kind of warmed up. And in fact, today it might even get above freezing later this afternoon. Yeah. We had 16 below, a few weeks back.
So now is the time to talk about this. But before we do, I want to just tell you something, and our listeners, something that I just heard this morning about compact fluorescent bulbs. And I think you probably already know this, but I want to tell you that I was talking to somebody who is an electrician. And he said that the EPA, what he does is, one of the things he does is that he swaps out light bulbs for fluorescence in order to save energy on an EPA program. And the EPA is all over him to, those are his words, the EPA is all over me to recycle the old bulbs. And what he does is he takes them to a recycling center and they throw them in the trash. I think you said that on the show,
right,
when you were on before. But he also told me that they don't recycle the mercury, but they recycle the glass. And so that glass goes into asphalt. It's mixed with asphalt, and it becomes our road paving with the mercury in it because the mercury doesn't get recycled. And so that just so doesn't make sense. Okay, so here.
All right, I'm getting all angry now because there's two things I got to reply to before I just pop.
And, go ahead.
And one is that you started off by talking about how the CFLs save energy. And I want to emphatically say, nuh-uh. I mean, and we're going to get to that as part of our stuff today. And I've got at least one thing. But I've got a list of things that show where you do not save energy with CFLs. And I could, it would take me a little bit of time. But you know, that's an angry point. And then the next thing is that you're saying, like, this guy, it's his job to go to people's houses and take away their incandescent bulbs and replace them with the CFLs. But now, let's suppose that you are a company and you make CFLs, and or even more, you import CFLs. And let's suppose for a moment that the consumer price of a CFL is $3, but they actually arrive at our shores for $12. But it turns out that you've worked things out so that for every light bulb that people actually end up with in their homes, that you get $50. So you've hired a guy to go out and put, like, he'll put a dozen bulbs into every house he visits. So you're getting $600 every time this guy does this. Now, is it possible that it's not the mission to save energy, but really, it's the mission of this guy to get $50 for every bulb? I mean, it's not the guy that's doing the installing. He's not getting $50 for every bulb. It's some other guy, some other some other guy that's like a middleman of sorts. He's a guy in a suit. I don't know. We used to call them fat cats. I don't know what to call them anymore. I refer to them as bad guys because they've worked a deal with the government. They've worked things out. They've got 87 different subsidies from 87 different directions, and it all adds up to a lot of money. But each subsidy office doesn't know about the other subsidy office. He's got a racket going. And that's why we're getting the CFLs pushed down our throats. It has nothing to do with energy savings. If they really cared about energy savings, they'd bring you a clothesline. Sorry, I'm done. Deborah? Hello?
You're listening to Toxic Talk Radio. This is Deborah Lindad, and we're back from our technical difficulties. I hope you can hear me now. Paul, are you there?
I'm here. Yeah.
Okay, good. I understand I'm the one that disappeared. It must have been your forceful comments.
Oh, sorry. And I was being wondering what happened. And I thought, oh, no, I've made everybody angry.
No.
First time for that.
No, this is live radio, so occasionally we have technical difficulties, but we usually manage to solve them. So, Paul, I started off talking about fluorescent bulbs, and we didn't introduce you properly. So why don't you tell us what you do and tell us about permaculture?
Oh, well, let's see. What do I do? I spend all my days being passionate about permaculture. I'm trying to be less angry, and I think the thing that I try to do is rather than being angry at bad guys, I'm trying very hard to instead build or convey good things. And so I spend time making videos, writing articles. I now have 225 acres in Montana. We're conducting a variety of experiments in order to try and build a better world. Does that help?
That's very good that you're doing that. And there's a lot of great information on Paul's website, which is richsoil.com. Or do you want to give a different one?
So we've got richsoil.com is where I put my personal rants and also my articles. And then we've got permies.com, which is a site where I'm trying to be less ranty and nurture a community. So when people have questions about permaculture, it's now the largest permaculture site on the internet, and a lot of people go there to get their questions answered.
Oh, great. That's great. So let me say that the things that we're talking about today, you have some articles that you've written, and if you go to toxicfreetalkradio.com, I have the links to those specific articles, and you can get them there. But tell us, like, the one paragraph definition of what permaculture is.
Permaculture is a more symbiotic relationship with nature so that I can be even lazier.
That's a great definition. I like that one. Okay, we'll take that one. Okay, let's talk about heat.
All right, so today's topic is heat. And because when we consider all the different pollution in the world, that so much of it is tied to energy. And here in Montana, 3/4 of our energy consumption is used for heat. And so when they come and they talk to you about, oh, the best way for you to save energy is by using these light bulbs, I don't think that that's true. I think that, you know, when you're going to really make a dent in heat, it's going to be in energy consumption, it's going to be with heat. And I've got 3 points to cover. And I've got them documented as articles out at richsoil.com. And the first article is about a few years ago how I cut 87% off of my electric heat bill. And so my life is perpetual experimentation. And so this particular winter, I did a collection of experiments to see how much I could cut off my electric heat bill while still feeling like I am living in luxuriant warmth. There are people there who will turn off the heat and suffer for it, and they'll just endure it. And I'm very specifically did not want to travel that path. So that's the first article. So there's good, better, and best.
Let's just talk about that. No, give us the overview. Go ahead.
Okay, so good, better, and best. That's good, cutting 87% off. The second one eliminates it in a conventional home, and that's using something called a rocket mass heater. It heats your home with 1/10 the wood and produces 1/1000th of the smoke as a conventional wood heater. The third one, the third article, is called a wafati. And this is where we use the heat from the summer to heat your home in the winter. And down in Florida, you might be interested in the inverse, where you can use, and I know that physicists are going to be upset that I'm going to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway, and that is where you could use the cool from the winter to cool your home in the summer.
Wow, I want that. I want that.
So we'll get to that at the end of your show here. So
okay.
we're going to start off with how I cut 87% off of my electric heat bill.
Okay.
And I could easily spend 6 hours talking about this. I'm going to try and think of a way to skip past it. But in general, the idea was turn the thermostat from 72 down to 50, and that's too cold. I've got to tell you, 50 is just way too cold. But
I know it's
rather than
right now it's 50 degrees right where I'm sitting.
Right. Now,
I'm looking at the thermometer.
If you did not put on a coat and you went and tried to do your work outside, you would feel too cold really fast.
Right.
Like in about a minute and a half, you would be too cold to work. You would, your fingers would turn numb. You would, I mean, whatever it is, I mean, maybe you work at a computer and you type stuff up and it's like, no, now you can't type. It's like after about a minute and a half, it's like, oh, it's too cold. And granted, here in Montana, I think people are a little bit more durable, but we're you know, to the cold. But I still think that it's like, no, let's be comfortable. Let's be perfectly comfortable without adding a lot of layers of clothes and stuff like that. Now, granted, those are techniques also to add lots of layers of clothes and stuff. But what we focused on was turn the thermostat in the house down to 50, and rather than trying to heat the whole house, heat the people. Keep in mind there are three kinds of heat, and the least efficient form of heat is convective heat. And this is where you heat the air and the air heats you. That's the least efficient. And that's what's the most dominant form of heat in American homes today. The second type of heat, which is relatively efficient, pretty efficient, is radiant heat. And this is what the sun uses. So if it's a cold day, but it's a sunny day, and you go out and you turn your face to the sun, your face will feel warmed by the sun,
mm-hmm.
even though it's
yes.
so very cold.
Yes.
Radiant heat. And you'll get the same thing from lots of different sources. Like if you're standing near a wood stove, you will feel the radiant heat from the stove. It's directly to you. Well, at the same time, you can feel some of the heat that's going around the room, which is going to be the convective heat where it's heating the air. But the most efficient form of heat is conductive heat. And that's where there's like a warm rock, and you hold the warm rock in your hand. Then that is the most efficient form of heat, where there is a warm thing and you're feeling that warm thing. Sometimes you might, let's suppose for a moment that you're married and you have a spouse, and your spouse is in the bed with you, and now it's much warmer. Your spouse is warm. That's conductive heat. They're not really putting out all that. They're not putting out as much heat as an actual heater, but they're putting out just a tiny little bit of heat. But since you're getting it through conductive heat, you feel much warmer. So another one would be somebody has sat in a chair and the chair is warm, and when you go and you sit in that warm chair, then you feel warm.
Mm-hmm.
It warms you. It's conductive heat. There's very little actual heat there, but since you're getting it through the most efficient kind of heat possible, conductive heat, then it's much better. So now, it's like, okay, well, we're going to try and save money on electricity. So the first thought is like when you're going to heat just yourself instead of heat the entire house, you get one of those little heaters, those little personal heaters.
Yep,
like
I'm sitting on top of one right now.
Ah,
on top of one right now.
1500.
And it keeps my feet warm, but my head is cold.
Okay. Your head is cold. That's a very good point. Your head is cold, and your legs might be a little too warm. Right?
No, but my head is cold.
Okay, but your head is cold. So the thing is, first of all, let's point out that this uses 1,500 watts typically. I mean, there's other ones that use less, but for the most part, 1,500 watts. And then it shoots the heat by your legs, and then it heats the room, not necessarily the whole house, but it's effectively heating the room. In the meantime, while you're waiting for the room to heat up, then yes, your fingers and your face are cold. Now, what we did was we counted that as a fail. I mean, it was an improvement. Now you're using less heat, but you're still not comfortable. And you got to kind of get the whole room to heat up until you feel comfortable. So what we did was is where we ended up. We tried all kinds of things. There's lots and lots of experiments. And I've got a YouTube on video now that shows a young woman where she's wearing a regular layer of clothes. Not an excessive Montana bunch of layers, but a regular layer of clothes. And she's sitting in what we call a heat bubble. And it's not really a bubble of any kind. She's just sitting at a desk. And we have 82 watts of micro heaters. So she has a heater at her feet, which is just simply a dog bed heater. They make those to keep your pets warm. And it's about 15 watts. And then the keyboard and the mouse where she's sitting are both heated.
I didn't know you could heat those.
Yeah, it's a novelty item. And before we got to these items, we tried some other things that would put heat on your hand. But the most important piece, the star of the show.
Before you tell us, we have to go to a break.
Okay.
This was a perfect time. So you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. We're here with Paul Wheaton, and we're talking about lowering your energy bills and having less toxic heat. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and Toxic Free Talk Radio is at toxicfreetalkradio.com. You can go there to get more information about this show, other shows, all of the 100 or more shows we've already done, toxicfreetalkradio.com. Anyway, Paul's website is richsoil.com, and today we're talking about heating your home, saving energy, and being less toxic about it. And Paul, you're going to tell us what is the star of the home heating show.
All right, so the mission is to cut 87% off of the electric heat bill. And this is a thing that I did a few years ago. And so instead of heating the whole house, we're going to heat a person. And so we've got the dog bed heater at your feet. We have a heated keyboard and a heated mouse. And then the star of the show has been banned. The star of the show is no longer allowed to be manufactured or imported to the United States. The star of the show that saved me $900 in heating costs, electric heating costs, one winter, is an incandescent light bulb, a 40-watt incandescent light bulb. So in order to heat the person, we had the light bulb was positioned so that it was kind of shining radiant heat onto my head, my face, my arms, my hands, my chest. So the front part of me was being heated by this light bulb, and that was 40 watts. And between all the devices, it added up to 82.5 watts. So this, compare that to your 1,500-watt heater, and you're still not feeling warm. Your legs are warm, but your face and hands are not warm.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I wish I could just go get a swing arm lamp, as you recommend, and put an incandescent light bulb in it, but we can't do that anymore, right? They're banned now. I can't run down to the store
and get this. Welcome to January of 2014. While the ban started on January 1st of 2014 for these light bulbs, my understanding at this point in time is that the they're no longer allowed to be manufactured or imported in the United States. So there might still be some at your local store. They're allowed to sell out their inventory. And it's possible that halogen lights, I mean, so that's what they're trying to do.
Let's talk about some of the other types of light bulbs that might do the same thing. Like immediately I thought of those red heat lamps, but you don't want to be sitting under a red heat lamp all day long. But halogens are very hot.
Well,
so couldn't you do this with a halogen?
I mean, that's part of what they're trying to do, though. I mean, they're declaring that they need to be more efficient in lumens per watt used. And it's kind of like, well, here's a great thing in Montana is that we get light and heat. And not only do we get heat from these lights, but it's a far more efficient kind of heat than convective heat, which is, you know, what most people's electric heat is, or their non-electric heat is typically convective heat. So this is an extremely efficient form of heat for a human being if you work with it, if you consider how it's used. And it's a big benefit is keep it relatively close, point it to the person that needs to be heated, and you'll get that heat. The other thing I think is, I think we talked about this in the last time I was on your show, is light quality. And I just don't think that any of the other light bulbs has the light quality that you can get from an incandescent. But
I totally agree. Incandescents are my favorite. Okay, so I want to make sure that we talk about all of your three options here before the show is over, so we don't have to give 30 seconds each to the other two subjects. So let's move on to the rocket stove mass heater.
Okay. This is something that uses just a lot of people are heating their homes with nothing but the twigs that naturally fall off the trees in their yard. And they burn so cleanly that people have built these and are using them in places where wood-burning devices are not allowed. And it effectively looks like they have a dryer vent coming out of their living room. The idea is that rather than having a conventional wood stove and there's a bunch of smoke that goes out your chimney that is leaving your house at 300 to 600 degrees, that instead you burn it far more completely, and then what goes out of your house is usually steam and CO2 out the wall at a temperature of 70 to 100 degrees. So you've captured far more of the heat, and you've burned the material far more completely. So it's a strange contraption. It's something that's a DIY sort of a thing. We're working on making it so that people don't have to have as much DIY ability. We're coming up with solutions. Over the last year, we've done a huge amount of work in the space of, like, being able to have something that's shippable. So somebody could buy a thing, have it shipped to them, all the hard parts are taken care of, and then it's a much easier task. But the people that are building them now, we estimate that there's probably 200,000 of these in existence today, that where people are heating their homes with a rocket mass heater today, and they built it themselves, entirely themselves. They didn't buy any special components or anything like that. So it's got two major parts. One is where the fire is burned in a very different way. I mean, when you look at it, even starting the fire is different than how you would start a fire in a conventional wood stove. And then it has a large thermal mass, and then you heat the mass as well as heat the room. So there's a radiant heat component as well as a convective heat component, and then there's this thermal mass that will give off heat for days after the fire has gone out. So people who have a conventional wood stove are used to the idea of, like, you gotta set your fire up at night so it will burn all night long, so when you get up in the morning it's not freezing cold out, and, you know, not freezing cold in your house. But a rocket mass heater solves that, because you'll burn your fire at night, and then the fire goes out. You burn a very fast, hot, efficient fire, and then you're done. And then the thermal mass has been heated, and it continues to give off heat through the night, even though there's no fire burning. It just uses thermal mass.
That's wonderful. That's a really great idea. I lived in a little cabin out in the woods for 12 years, and I had to get up every winter morning in the freezing cold and build my fire. And that was not an easy thing to do, but there was only heat in the house. And I love having that heat. And I was once in a house that had a big stove and had a lot of mass. And the heat was the best heat that I've ever experienced because it just radiated off of off that mass. We have to go to break again, but when we come back, you can tell us about how we're going to heat our houses in the winter from the heat from the summer and cool them in the summer with the cold from the winter. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest is Paul Wheaton. We're talking about warming our houses. Stay with us. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and today we're talking about heating our homes, saving money, and doing it with less toxic pollution and chemicals. My guest is Paul Wheaton, permaculture expert. And we're going to now, Paul, let's go to talking about the building that doesn't need any heat. But let me just ask you, because I need to know the answer to this question. Can this technique be done in retrofit?
I would have to say that you might be able to do a little bit of retrofit, but it's probably not much. That would require a lot of research.
But people building, could, if they wanted to start building a house, this is the house to build.
True,
This is the house to build, yeah. Okay, so tell us about it.
All right, so this is combining the works of Mike Ehler and John Haight. They're both people from around this area and where it's really cold. But this is a building that from the inside looks like a log cabin with a lot of glass, and it's designed to be built on sloped woodland. So that way you use the trees that are growing on the land. And these are trees that normally would be thinned or taken out as part of good, healthy forest management. But instead of burning them, which is the most common practice here in Montana, that you could build this structure, this home with them. It'll be an above-ground structure, not an underground structure, an above-ground structure, and it would have a thick earthen roof, and it would be integrated in the hillside, so from the outside, it's pretty much invisible. It's so well integrated into the earth, it just simply looks like part of the hillside. You mm-hmm. might see some of the glass, but it's again, an above-ground structure. Now, the amazing thing about it is that it will hold a temperature of 72 degrees year-round. And this is something that has been proven by John Haight in his book, Passive Annual Heat Storage. So we took those designs and modified them to be something where it could be in a much less expensive structure. So last year, we went to work on building the first Wafati. It didn't get completed by the time winter hit. However, it was completed enough that a family did move in, and they're just going to have to supplement with heat until we can finish the building next summer. And then we'll be able to do the official tests on this exact design. But John Haight's previous work demonstrates that these techniques do work. What else can I tell you about it?
Well, I'm just wondering if so I get the fact that it's a above ground house, but it has a green roof on it so that there's a lot of thermal mass on the top. So I'm just thinking of like pushing up a little square of taking the trees off, rearranging them. And so from the outside, it just looks like there's a house there, but the green part is still there. And there's obviously some techniques that are being applied. And for those of you who are now very interested and want to get all the details, you can get it there's a whole article that Paul has written with pictures and videos and everything on his website. And you can go to toxicfreetalkradio.com and there's a link to this. But I'm just wondering how can some of those techniques, can any of those techniques be applied to an existing house? I know I asked this before, but I'm going to ask it differently. Can any of those techniques be applied? Like my cooling bill is $300 a month.
Well, there's a similar technique that, I mean, there's several similar techniques that are along these lines that are being used in different parts of the country in different ways. But one technique that could be, well, you're saying be applied to an existing house, and I want to say it depends on the house. But yeah. let's talk about how this works, and then we'll see if that helps to answer your question.
Okay.
And so wherever you are in the world, if you dig 20 feet down into the ground, you will find a subsoil or rock or clay or something, and it will stay at a fixed temperature all year long. So here in Montana, if you dig 20 feet down and you put a thermometer down there, you'll find that it reads 54 degrees all day long, every day, all year long.
Wow.
So it's kind of like, wow, that's a convenient thing to know. However, 54 degrees is not very comfortable. So it's like, well, what if we could set that? What if we could change that? And that's where John Haight's work was.
Yeah.
And so basically he wanted to create a large enough thermal mass that's insulated and to be able to set the temperature of it. And he came up with his math showed that you need at least 20 feet of it in order to be able to define what the fixed temperature is going to be. So that's what he did, is that he put an insulated umbrella for 20 feet in every direction around the house, and then he kept all the soil under the house and within 20 feet of the house dry and insulated. And then this, we refer to this as the thermal umbrella. And Haight's work further went to make a structure where it was a thick earthen roof, and that the umbrella would actually go over the
earthen,
house.
What, are we talking about a 20-foot roof?
Oh, a thick earthen roof. So the umbrella that we're talking about in John Haight's work would actually go over the house. Now, I think that there's a guy, Don Stevens, in the Spokane, Washington area, and he's got something that's a little bit closer to what you're asking about, in which case he has something that resembles a conventional home, but the umbrella is actually under the home, and then he'll install vents that will go down under the home, and then in the summertime when it's really, really hot, and, you know, the temperatures under a steel roof can get to be like 140 degrees. Mm-hmm. And so then he'll pump that down into the thermal mass under the house, and then also pump what's currently under the house back up to the roof. So then the area under the roof is kept cool.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a technique in this space. And then when the time comes that winter comes and the inside of the house is getting kind of cool, then he will pump that stuff from under the house into the house. So that way, he'll get all that 140-degree air captured from last summer into the house during the coldest parts of the winter. Now, the stuff that we're trying to do at the Wafati is a more passive solution. We're trying to come up with something that does not require pumps.
Yeah.
But we're currently in phases of experimentation. I mean, as much as these works have been completed by several different people, you know, we're continuing to try to refine it and make it less expensive. We hope to have a structure that will cost less than $200. Like you could build a small home, the shell of a small home, for less than $200.
Oh, my God.
And we're also hoping that using some of the work from Mike Ayler to be able to create something that is very fast to build. So most of the buildings that are eco buildings, that are healthy buildings, tend to be far more expensive, whether it's because of labor or because of materials. So we're trying to come up with something that is a tiny fraction of the cost in labor as well as materials.
This is fascinating to me because, you know, we what I don't even know how to begin to say this. We live in an industrial age where we were all born in a world where everything is defined by industrialism. And so all the building materials we have for our houses are made in factories, and they're installed by people who have been trained and licensed and all these things. And yet, in looking to be less polluting and less toxic and more resource efficient and everything, people like you and me, we're looking to, like, how did people live? How were things constructed? How did we have our daily life before all this industrialization was there? But also looking beyond and applying our creativity to making something new. And there was a time when people built their houses with their own hands, with the materials that were available. Like, until 200 years ago, that's the way everybody built their houses. But we don't even have that concept as part of our reality because we're so industrial oriented.
In a lot of places, building that way is against the law.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I'm going to have to just cut you short on this because I know you have probably a ton to say about this because we have less than a minute. So I'm going to just stop right there and we'll have you back and we can talk about a lot more things. And thank you so much for being with us, Paul. Again, the website is richsoil.com. We've been talking about how to heat your home. There's lots of information there. And you're listening to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com. I'm Deborah Lynn. No, it's Toxic Free Talk Radio. And you can go to ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and we'll be back tomorrow to talk more about how you can identify toxic chemicals in your life, your home, your body, and how you can live without them.